on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
We, as human beings, there's something that's keyed into us that wants to connect. Mm-hmm. We want to understand ourselves. We want to understand our world. We want to understand and relate to each other. And so I think that sacred geometry helps in so many ways, because energetically, you know, it's doing that. Mm-hmm. It's instructing us that everything is really related. And, you know, it can really support some of the dysfunctions that we feel in this life, because I think we've been like off the mark with how our psyche has taken things in. We're a bit wounded from a lot of the stuff that goes on. And when we come back to this essence and we go, you know, there is love in all of this. That intelligence, you know, whatever you want to call it, you know, spirit, soul, God, you know, you name it, that is implanted in everything.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, authors Gail and Gregory Hoag join me to discuss their book, Sacred Geometry, The Universal Language of Divine Alignment. They explain how sacred geometry is a universal dance that expresses relationship, wholeness, connection, and energy flows, and is grounded in the creative intelligence, consciousness, and love of the universe. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. With over four decades of dedicated expertise in the realm of sacred geometry, Gail and Gregory Hoag have pioneered groundbreaking technologies and new discoveries that have transformed the lives of tens of thousands across the globe with their teaching and tools. They have harnessed the power of divine archetypes to amplify higher dimensional energies and elevate the human experience, catalyzing personal and spiritual growth. The Hoags are well-known speakers and teachers and esteemed leaders in the world of sacred geometry, revealing how the universal patterns displayed in sacred geometry play a foundational role in the evolution of consciousness. Through their lifelong dedication, they continue to inspire and guide countless individuals towards a path of higher consciousness, well-being, and profound connection. They join me today to discuss their acclaimed new bestseller, Sacred Geometry, The Universal Language of Divine Alignment. Gail and Gregory, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Oh, thank you for having us, Nick. We enjoy being here.
Yeah, we're looking forward to getting into this with you.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it too. I'll be honest, I don't know much about sacred geometry. I know more now after having read your book. And I just want to throw this in, this is personal. What's really interesting is I had a friend a couple of weeks ago who I haven't been in contact with very much over the years, and we just kind of reignited communication, who expressed an interest in sacred geometry. And I've got one book that I've never read, so I recommended that. But then I just interviewed another author on sacred geometry, and then you came up. So it's something that's coming into my life for some reason. Mm-hmm. So I find that really interesting. But I think that the first question that I have for you is, what is sacred geometry?
That's a great place to begin. And we're going to go back and forth a little bit, because what I like to do is give an overview, like the worldview kind of thing. And then we'll drill down deeper into it as we go along. So sacred geometry is not what you learned in math. You know, there's a lot of people that go, oh, I hated math. And I didn't do well in math either, but I actually love geometry because it's tangible, it's real. And what it really expresses in its sacred form is how everything starts out as just pure energy, formless energy, before it's found its way into something concrete that we can touch, that we can feel, that we can interact with here in this physical life. But what happens from that place of pure energy to form? Well, it needs structure, it needs codes, it needs rhythms and patterns and cycles and energy that is directing it to be, to become what it is. And you know, we live in a universe that sometimes seems kind of crazy and random. And sacred geometry instructs us that it may be looking a little crazy from some of our perspectives. However, it is precise. It is dependable. You know that if you plant a seed, we were just looking at some plants that we had planted a few weeks ago. If you plant the seed of a zucchini, you expect that it's going to come up with certain kinds of leaves, certain amounts of leaves that start out, you know, with two leaves, and then they start going into the third and on, and you know, can grow into this huge plant. There is cycle and rhythm, and it is all over in everything. It's in our bodies. It's in life all around us. It's in our weather patterns. Everything has structure to it. And so what geometry shows us is that it comes in ways that energy can work, so it can resonate. So not only is there physical structure, but there's also vibrational pattern. And those patterns are what connect us to everything. So, you know, you walk around in nature and you look and see the way that flowers look. You know, you might find six-petaled flowers. You might find that, you know, if you look into a crystal, you're going to see a six-sided construct over and over again. Everything is based on that. So our opportunity in understanding it is really finding our connection. We live in a world that has a lot of distractions, whether it's, you know, the way our lives work, stress, EMFs, judgment, toxins, whatever it is. There are so many things that serve to distract us from the essence of who we really are. And what sacred geometry does is it helps us to come back to who we are and evolve who we are. And in our book, Nick, we start out with talking about consciousness because everything begins there. And so we began our book with what is consciousness? Because even though we have all these physical things, life is so much more than those physical things. And it's all embedded and held within this beautiful foundation of consciousness. And that consciousness is held in love. And as we come to understand that and find it in ourselves and our environment, we can reconnect. And our work in all these years, we've been doing this for close to 40 years together. Our work has been to develop tools, technologies that support people in these divine connections that are based on these sacred geometric principles.
Wonderful. Very well stated and clear, I think, for people. But there are some questions that I have based on what you just said. I kind of want to dig in a little bit with, let's start with consciousness, because that's a major question right now in terms of philosophy and even science of what is this? And there is an emerging, not an emerging idea, but the idea that consciousness is foundational is starting to take on more weight within the conversation. And I appreciate that. And I also appreciate this idea of order. And it seems to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that much of this work that you're doing and writing about is, it's recognizing this order, it's a divine order, and that what we need to do is put ourselves in greater alignment or in alignment with this divine order.
Totally. I mean, that's the essence of what we're sharing in the book. You got it, Nick. There is this language of sacred geometry. That's why that's in the title of our book. And language means that this is the way everything in universe expresses itself. So that's why it's universal. You could literally communicate with beings on the other side of the universe using number, pattern, rhythm, cycle, all the things expressed in the natural world that we sometimes take for granted. But as you said, it's repeatable again and again. We see this order. And so to look behind that order for particular archetypes, like ways that anything from a galaxy to a molecule can express the same geometry on such different scales, it's like following a particular pattern that can be stretched from the micro to the macro. And so when we look at how universe does that and then say, this is the way universe is dancing, this is the way energy moves, when we bring those same geometries into our environment, as I have for those that can see this next to me, certain geometries spinning. It's like these geometries are based on these universal patterns. And so they start picking up energy just like an antenna system. So if the Earth and the Moon are following a particular dance and the way that they come together, if we mimic that dance in a geometry, because even light itself, we found, has geometry to it. And that geometry, what makes sacred geometry really sacred to me, is that when you find the right geometries, it can move energy. It can resonate with energy, just the way a C tuning fork will start to vibrate when you're playing a C tone. And so what happens is when you bring these elements together, the geometries together, and put that on your person or in your environment, a field starts getting generated of energy that takes us back into what's natural. You see, right now we spend so much time inside, sitting in front of our computers, walking on cement, surrounded by buildings, and it's really hard to know what is that natural order that is going on. And yet, science has really been measuring when people go into nature, good things happen to their body. It's like when the sun is shining, you're next to a brook, and trees have their leaves out and winds blowing through the leaves, and you feel this thing called, positive, negative ions, and your body starts shifting. And so it's that same shift we've discovered that we can create by working with particular geometries in an environment.
Wonderful.
Because we come from the perspective that geometry is not just an abstract thing, it's something that, geometry is three-dimensional. There's a lot of people that have really enjoyed sacred geometry from looking at drawings that are beautiful that help instruct us in what's there, and they trigger things in our consciousness, in our minds. When I first saw Gregory carrying around a box of geometries, and I put my hand over and I went, whoa, I can feel this. What's going on here? And that's what really excited me and triggered me, because if there is something that I'm feeling, then it must have some purpose. It must do something. So what does it do? So that became our exploration from the time that we got together back in 1985, was we've got something here that he had been getting downloads, and his guidance had really been showing him things, and he was making them. And then the next 40 years were great. Now, what are they meant to do? How can we make them useful? And so we started out with realizing that some of these structures supported us in going into deep meditations much more rapidly, and then being able to come back and ground that again. Others helped us just feel different, feel more connected. And so the more that we recognize that sacred geometry isn't just, it's not just a mental thing for us to play with. It's really meant to be structural. And how do we make it work in our environments? We live in a world that is pretty boxy in what we tend to build these days, you know? There's a lot of computer generated architecture. However, when you go back in historically and you see that ancients understood sacred geometry, they used it in temples, they used it in whether it's the pyramids, Stonehenge, Mayan temples, cathedrals, structures that were designed on very specific principles, so that when people came together in these spaces, they felt different. They experienced an elevation of consciousness. They were able to reach to higher dimensions of who they are. And that is what we have right now to work with. And it's a very important thing right now to work with, because we're in a time where things are moving really fast and consciousness can evolve more rapidly. So the tools of sacred geometry are particularly necessary now to help us to move to those higher realms of manifesting our multidimensional nature, our intuition, our creativity, our understanding of how we connect to universe.
Yeah, the previous guest I had on who spoke about sacred geometry, that's what he looked at was the ancient temples. And he even takes it back to Göbekli Tepe and shows, look, it's here, and shows all the various, Stonehenge and some of the cathedrals and whatnot, that it's all there. And I like the idea that there's also a pedigree to it. I think there's a long pedigree to this. And I wish I had known all of this when I was studying geometry in high school. I probably would have paid more attention and enjoyed it a lot more, because it would have lifted it up off the paper, and made it a real thing. But I think that it is so vitally important. So I'm in agreement. It's so vitally important right now that we put ourselves back into connection with the divine order of things.
And what we talk about in our book, even though we don't specifically mention where some of these elements come from, but there is more and more information coming forward that there really were some major catastrophes about 12,500 and 9,600 years ago. So we're talking about major pieces of a comet hitting the northern part of the world where there were at that time 12,500. We were just coming out of the ice age. So there is the potential for and civilizations that existed before that time, that the knowledge, the information, certain numbers that show up again and again and again in the literature, in different religions, all over the world, from the Americas to Asia to India and Europe, we find these numbers popping up. And what we did in our book is we started seeing that there are geometries connected to these numbers. For example, the Platonic solids, which there are five geometries that are called the five major building blocks of everything, because they all have equal faces, equal angles, and we are familiar with some of them, like the tetrahedron and the cube and so forth. Well, if you take a number of these and add up the degrees on the surface, you're going to find the exact diameter of the sun, the diameter of the earth, and the diameter of the moon, all predated, so to speak. I mean, these Platonic solids existed before the creation of the physical world, because the physical world follows these patterns. And then if you take the diameter of the moon and add it to the diameter of the earth, you get a geometry that is sitting here right next to me right now for those that can see us. And this geometry expresses certain very particular ratios and relationships. For example, the one above it has triangles on it, and each triangle is equal to the face of the pyramid at Giza. So they built that Giza pyramid and those faces following these higher order patterns in order to generate energy. And the one on the bottom that I was referring to, those angles, when you add them up on that one, it equals the diameter of the moon plus the diameter of the earth. So the dance between our earth and moon are expressed in this geometry, which also expresses how we were created. Because, and now I may go to an image that I have here from our book. Let me find it right here. And this is working with our human body, the way the distance from the hand to, so the tip of the finger to the wrist, and then the wrist to the elbow is in a particular relationship called phi relationship. And the head to the navel to the feet is in that same relationship. All these different aspects of our body, even down to DNA. And when we look at the natural world, this is where we discover the curves. You see, our body, if it kept growing, if we didn't stop, we'd end up curving around like the broccoli or the nautilus shell that continues to grow and up to the spiral found in the galaxies that are often spiral galaxies. So you see this geometry that's there expressed by things like diameters of the moon and the earth in miles. We have other places where we show how these distances and miles relate to certain geometries, relate to time, because the diameter of the moon 2,160 miles is also the length of time of one age, 2,160 years. So there's a resonance there. And what we start to see is that every aspect of this whole universal dance is expressing relationships, connection, and energy flows through relationship and through connection. So not only is it inspiring for us to see that we are indeed connected to each other, that there are ways of expressing how we are all springing from unity, from that oneness, and now our opportunity is to rediscover that within ourselves, that connection to all that is, so that we can be of service doing what it is that we've come here as an opportunity to do, each one of us in our unique way, to connect with everyone else and realize this is our opportunity to help each one be part of that whole, and for me to recognize that I can help myself in that process and grow in love and grow in that understanding.
It implies a divine intelligence.
It does.
It's more than an implication.
Yeah, it's hard to argue against it when you look at this and you see the order. It's very difficult to say. You can't say it's random.
That's right. That's right. And I think that's really important because we live in a time where people are feeling so separate. And as a result, they feel lonely. Like we as human beings, there's something that's keyed into us that wants to connect. We want to understand ourselves. We want to understand our world. We want to understand and relate to each other. And so I think that sacred geometry helps in so many ways because energetically, it's doing that. It's instructing us that everything is really related. And, it can really support some of the dysfunctions that we feel in this life because I think we've been like off the mark with how our psyche has taken things in. We're a bit wounded from a lot of the stuff that goes on. And when we come back to this essence and we go, there is love in all of this. That intelligence, whatever you want to call it, spirit, soul, God, you name it, that is implanted in everything. There is nothing in creation that is just some random crazy thing, other than, maybe some of the things, the thoughts that we tend to think. However, down to basics, the love is there. And when we open ourselves up to the sense that love is imprinted into everything, everything that is, from energy into form in this dimension. And we're meant to connect with all these different levels. And it's all love. So allowing ourselves to resonate with that, to bring it into our lives, to heal ourselves with that, it's all accessible. And, to me, sacred geometry has just really led a way of getting that down into not only more deep understanding, but actually resonance. So that when, when we're out in nature and you're feeling the flows of the way nature is created authentically, you can breathe better, you can think better, your creativity gets inspired. It's a wonderful experience. We can have that anywhere at all that we want, as sacred geometry is brought into on our bodies, in our, in our environment, whatever it is. It brings us back to who we really are.
Yeah.
And
Well,
I wanted to say one thing about, excuse me, just the, there is a divine intelligence. There is, and it's like infinity of consciousness. I mean, the point is, the difficult thing is that a religion wants to take it and own it, and we can't own, we can't grasp infinity. We can't grasp anything that's at that level of expression, and yet it underlies everything. And I feel that there is consciousness within a rock that's moving at a much slower level. There's consciousness within plants and animals and human beings, and it's growing within all of these things. It's growing within us, and we are at such primitive levels of understanding the depth of that intelligence, the depth of that awareness. So our goal in this lifetime is to be of service to people by helping them expand their awareness beyond just this physical expression into the higher dimensional aspects that we are also part of, even though we don't realize that our mind can move into the future, into the past on a higher mental level, and that our emotional body exists outside of the physical and surrounds us with colors that some people can see. And so these are aspects of our multi-dimensional reality that the more we expand our awareness, the more we can incorporate these higher dimensional perspectives that allow us to look down. And so I can watch this character, Gregory, and go, he's here as a puppet dancing around. And that puppet can be run by something more conscious and divine, something more connected to what we would call soul. And the more that happens, the more he gets out of the way, the more that experience can be of something that is larger, more divine. And yet, again, we can't own it. We have to see that we're all connected and dancing in our own way from our own perspectives, and we're supporting each other and growing to something bigger.
Amen. Well, like I said, there's a pedigree to this, and something that comes to mind. I know you mentioned, I think it's the Younger Dryas, that period of time at the 12,000 or so period. And I know that you mentioned Graham Hancock in the book. And one of the things that he says is that we're a species with amnesia. And it seems to me that that applies to the sacred geometry. My background is in philosophy and religious studies. And with philosophy, I know Pythagoras, where everything is number. And Plato, we talk about the Platonic forms. I remember in one of the dialogues, he says, number is the closest that we can get to form in this reality. And as I was reading your book, I'm like, yeah, Plato is all on board with this. And so what interests me is, why isn't this better known?
Well, that's what we're doing right now. We're trying to get it out. But,
Well, there's a lot that was missing from our education, wouldn't you say? When you took geometry, why is it that you had to like keep yourself from falling asleep sometimes? Because somehow there was a very important portion of what you were learning that either the teacher didn't know, or they didn't think a young student could really devour that yet. So I think there's a lot of misinformation in education. I think education has also been more focused on what do you need to do be to graduate and become a worker in this
Yes.
society. I think it's been oriented towards that rather than an evolved, functional, conscious, happy person who knows who you are and can really get in touch with your service, your purpose, your higher knowledge. So that's our job. Nick, I think that's really some of what is really happening right now, where we're here together to support people in recognizing who they are and filling in the missing pieces that we didn't learn from our families and our educational system, but we were hungry to learn. So here we are now, and there's just so much richness that we can provide for younger people and older people too, for all of us. And I'm seeing a lot of young people who are so open to learning about this. They're hungry for it. They get it. They get it at an intuitive level. I can't tell you how many people would, see some of our structures and they'd say, "Oh my gosh, I saw that in a dream." It's so interesting because it is part of our inherent consciousness, and we do recognize this once we're brought in touch with it.
And I think, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I've spent the past 20 years as a college professor, so I agree with everything that Gil just said. I think our education system is broken, and it's based on not educating people, but training people for work.
You would especially see that in the field of philosophy.
Oh, yeah.
But in our book, we describe the human body as being something similar to an iceberg, where the majority of the iceberg is hidden, and the majority of our beingness is also hidden. And we associate this concept of me just with the physical body, just with what we think is being generated within our minds, what is being generated within all of this stuff that we can touch and feel. And that's the nature of science. It's safe to work with what we think is reality. And yet, every spiritual tradition says this is an illusion. And the more we have gotten into sacred geometry and the energy of all that is, it becomes obvious that this is the illusion. Because when you look at the majority of what exists in this universe, it's pure energy, it's formless. 99.99999% of everything that exists is formless energy. And as it comes into matter, it informs in matter through particular patterns and rhythms and cycles. And this is where the study of that information is sacred geometry, because it's how the universe is doing it. And it's interesting that in our book, there was a quotation from Rudolf Steiner, who put together the whole Waldorf educational system. And his quotation came from 1917, where he said, "It's getting more and more difficult to be fully human because of all the electromagnetic frequencies that are getting in the way." And that was only 25 years after Nikolai Tesla lit up the World's Fair. And think of how many more electromagnetic frequencies, how many more toxins, how many more things with technology have come in the way of our being since that time. But what he was talking about was to be fully human is to really be totally engaged in all the aspects of who you are, which is beyond the physical, which is incorporating those higher realms, that aspect, that immortal aspect we refer to as soul. And speaking of truth, I mean, in philosophy, I mean, always when you put anything into words, you've lost the truth. If you can hear it or read it, it doesn't exist on that realm of pure truth. It is relative, not only relative to all the stuff going on down here, but relative to your interpretation, because we're all going to incorporate this reality based on belief systems that go back thousands of years. And I'm doing it because my mom did it, because her grandmother did it, blah, blah, blah. And so it is. We are automatons at this level of existence in the physical. And that's why the truth to be taught, we have to go beyond. And it opens up in some of the spiritual realms first. That's where meditation starts helping people get to a quiet point where they can even realize they might be more than just this physical body, because of being in a quiet space where you do it well enough, long enough, the thought stops being there. And without thought, what is the human being? What is this vehicle? In our way of understanding, what we've seen is that people often refer to the heart as a source of information. Trust your heart. And what we see in the way the body is structured is the heart is really a doorway. It's a portal. The heart chakra is the opening to the bigger part of your being. And when that part is engaged, it comes through the heart. So rather than the phrase, from the heart, we should perhaps be thinking through the heart. You bring the influx of information that is there for all of us on a universal level that can, utilize the brain. The brain, we talk about how underutilized it is, how we only use a small percent. Well, it's like the brain is a non-local phenomena. That means mindfulness exists on these higher dimensional levels in the fullness of our being. And when we're able to bring that into engagement with this physical character, it can flood in and information we didn't even know how we would ever access it, but it's there for us to access. And that's the way we've been building the things that we build for all these years, by working with higher aspects of understanding and allowing it to use the brain and the body as conduits to interact. So when human beings are ready to start working with that, and that's where we are right now, then these kinds of things can be taught and there'll be people ready to hear them and open up to that understanding.
A lot of what comes to mind, and this was when I was reading the book as well, is definitely a spiritual aspect. And I think that this is the great challenge that we have. And maybe it's not a challenge, but it's what we're doing is recognizing that there's more than just the physical realm, that we are more than just, meat sacks. And I think that's important. And I saw connections to a lot of different ideas within religion. And so, like what you were just talking about, one of the notes I made down here on my paper was first this idea of separation we find in religion, with, I and thou, that there's a difference between the two. But then in the Eastern traditions, you have tattvamasi, that thou art. And I think that's one of the core ideas, messages in what you're presenting is we are part of this divine, intelligent, creative consciousness.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's an important thing that, you know this from, religion. When you try to define, well, what is God? You
Yeah.
really get into big problems there. And in Judaism, there's so many different words, and it's like they all come down to the unknowable. And the only way we can know is by knowing ourselves and connecting in with what that is. When you look at, we were talking earlier about unity, and when you look at, well, what is unity? These are really big concepts. And the way that our mind works, it wants to break it down to try to understand what it is. But you can't. When you start breaking it down and you look at these different aspects of it, you lose it. You look at, what is an apple? Okay, I'm going to take this apple and I'm going to cut it into sections. Well, then you can take some journeys into, the way that the seeds are creating. If you cut it this direction, you can smell it, you can taste it, you can do all kinds of things with getting the texture of it, but you don't get the wholeness of it until you've had enough of a relationship with it that you know it in another way. You've digested it. And I think that's really the beauty of working with understanding ourselves in relationship to this oneness. We need to look at all the different aspects. In sacred geometry, we see that there's in the sequence of numbers we show in our book, the patterns and how evolutionary patterns work. And the more that we explore all of these kinds of things and see how numbers show up in very amazing ways with the mileage of, the diameters of the moon and the sun, and how it relates to all these different other patterns, you can sit back and go, wow, I mean, how could that possibly happen? Did somebody construct it that way? Well, I believe that there's a divine intelligence that did, because it's at the foundation of everything, that we're all one. And then when we get our oneness, our connections, then we can also appreciate all of our diversities. That's not, the duality isn't really something that is the opposite. It's not the distraction from it. It's inviting us in to understand it so that we can then have a greater sense of the whole. And, Buckminster Fuller was pretty amazing, where he understood synergy. And he taught us from his words, that when you put all these different pieces together, you can't possibly understand the strength and the integrity of what this structure is. However, the more that we delve into it, the more we understand it. And the beauty for that is that the more that we evolve, the more we understand, the more we recognize. Our journey is to evolve our consciousness. As we do that, and we evolve in such a manner that we open ourselves to resonate more with all that is, then we are truly representing unity and universality and oneness, and yet can still maintain that individual sense of who we are in this body. We can have both. However, it has to be done with being present
Right.
in the very moment, which means we have access to everything.
Wonderfully said. The thing that also came to mind in the book, and this is also part of a spiritual tradition, was especially when you were writing about the numbers 1, 2, and 3, this idea of the unity and then the duality, and that's necessary, and then you get the the Trinity, kind of the creation aspect. And what immediately jumped to my mind was Kabbalah, the Jewish mystical system, because that's kind of how those top three in the Tree of Life, the top three Sephirot, that's how it's understood. And I also was thinking in terms of the sixth Sephirot, which is Tephira, which is compassion and heart. And one of the things that you wrote in the book was that the number six doesn't just bring physical order, it is the order within all space and time. And so I saw this connection, and I know that Tiferet is also connected with, like I said, love and compassion, and it's what connects everything together. So I just saw that connection with what you were writing, and I thought it was so amazing.
It is fun how it all folds together in such order. And in many of the ancient books, in the let's see, the Sefer Yetzirah, which is one of the oldest sacred Kabbalistic books around, it starts out talking about how God engraved with 32 universal order. And we pointed out in our book how that is actually a particular degree of geometry that springs us from cube, from physicality, from the earth into the dodecahedron. And so it's a geometric progression, but the dodecahedron is the mystery. That's the ethers. That's the higher order. So we move through this particular angle of enlightenment, and it's there hidden in these Kabbalistic texts. And you go into other sacred texts, and you'll see these kinds of numbers there hidden. But until I had never seen it before, all of this information is just what we were guided to share. And what I'm seeing, what we're seeing when the way things are put together. Because then as I think I finished that chapter talking about the Great Pyramid at Giza. Again, it's indented on each side, and each one of those angles on the top is 32 degrees, which is the way they were accessing that higher order of that transformative aspect of creation through that angle, which shows up again when we were talking about how the human body's made and the phi ratio. That if you take a rectangle that's a phi ratio rectangle, where the long side divided by the short side is equal to phi, 1.618, that rectangle, you put a diagonal through it, and it's going to be 32 degrees in there as well. So it's there, caught up in life again. So much of the geometries that are around us that the ancients were speaking to are about life, about expression of life, and the opportunity that it is to have a physical body that's capable of bridging, these immense, immense distances of consciousness from the divine into the physical, and being able to actually bring that into the physical. I mean, that's our joy. That's the joy of every artist that's creating, of every co-creator in this reality. When we start doing that, it's like, oh, this is when I feel alive, when I can co-create with universe and express myself as that unity that I truly am by getting the personality out of the way.
What I appreciate is that I think that A lot of times people think that everything, you know, they have this idea that everything's random, and that if everything's random, there's no inherent meaning. And this gives a sense of meaning to the universe in our lives. And with what you were just saying, one of my favorite quotes from the mythologist Joseph Campbell was what he says, you know, we're not really looking for meaning. And we may be. But he said, what we want is to be present to our own lives. And something that jumped out at me is in the book, when you were talking about the pyramid, the Great Pyramid, the etymology of pyramid is fire at the center. And I never thought of that before. I'm like, well, yeah, you know, the pyre, funeral pyre, you know, that fire is there in the word. How, you know, why would that be? It has to be more than just, you know, it's, you know, let's just build a big triangle out in the desert. There's got to be something more to it than that. And it seems like that is that fire at the center, that's what we want. Everyone wants to feel that fire at the center. And I think that's what it means to be present to our own lives, is to feel that fire.
And that fire is transformational. You know, when there's fire, then you're taking whatever it is and you're going to move it into another substance. You're going to break it down. And, you know, and that's an interesting thing with fire because there's that breakdown. And, you know, even when people go to the pyramids, you know, or they've gotten, they're fortunate enough to go inside and experience the energy. It's very catalytic. It is meant to transform. The ancients really got that point. They wanted to create structures where human beings that maybe weren't really educated and didn't have the opportunities that we have to transform, they were given these different geometries, geometric structures that help them transform to higher beingness. To higher knowledge. And that always was essential in, you know, when you look at, you know, their doctrines, it really shows their belief in the afterlife, their belief in all the things about the higher levels of consciousness. That was a very important part of what they were about. And here we are, you know, in a world where so much is we focus so much on, you know, somebody says, "Hey, Nick, who are you? What do you do?" And they want to know like this simple little tagline that says, "Nick, former professor," you know, or whatever it is, as opposed to, "I'd love to know who you are. You know, share with me, you know, your wisdom, your inner joy, your compassion, whatever it is, big difference." And so I believe we're being transformed with all the things that are going on our planet now that are shaking us up, that want us to be transformed to the higher levels of who we are. You know, I was just looking at this morning some of what's going on the college campuses. I'm sure you're pretty interested in all this too. You probably have your take of why that is happening. And it takes me back to remembering when I was in college in 1968, and it was like we were in that place of the Vietnam War and the issues that were really becoming front and center about women's issues and racism and our the denial of the value of the earth. So much of that was shaking us up and transforming us. And I believe that that's part of what these structures are doing, what college students are going through on their campuses now, where they recognize that what we have out here in what we consider to be our lives, our modern lives, is only an illusion. And what we are doing is setting the fire to that so that we can transform into the higher realms of who we are. And not You know, it's not to say that we are just needing to evacuate that. We're not leaving it. We're changing it. We're bringing a higher intelligence to it. And we can do it in a more compassionate way when we're more mindful.
That's always the key. So I know that we're starting to run out of time here, but if you don't mind, I do have at least one final question for you. And that is, so let's say that someone is watching or listening to this conversation and it piques their interest. Other than reading your book, and it's a great book. I really wish I had read your book before I spoke to my other guest because you were able to explain a lot of this very, very clearly. But again, this person who's watching or listening, and they're like, okay, yeah, how do I work with this? You know, what's the process? How do I begin? You know, is it just the understanding, the recognition? How does someone go about doing this? How does someone start working with the sacred geometry?
What we've done in this process is we've created tools. And I think I explained in the book that we envision a tool like a hammer, for example, where I could give you and a number of people hammers. Some of you might build a house, some of you may crack a walnut with it and may even hit your thumb, and it's not the hammer's fault. It's simply a tool. And when you're done building the house, you built the house, not the hammer. So it can be an empowering thing. And what we've done is we've created geometric tools that some of which can be worn on the body, like a piece of jewelry,
I see
and
your
others
pendant.
like the pendant, which I could even go down and for those that can see, that's a close-up of the pendants that we're wearing. And there are two sides. One side with the star on it, when that's toward your body, it causes the energy in your field to move upwards, kind of like a big, we're toroidal donuts. The energy moves either up through the earth and out through the crown, or vice versa, it moves down. And so turning the pendant over will shift that energy and have you feel more grounded. But this is something that has about 35 different antenna systems inside where we work with circuit boards, photon generators, work with different types of shapes, oscillating crystals, and so forth. And all of what's going on in this pendant or in these geometries, it works with collecting energy and broadcasting energy that shifts the energy of the field that it's around, the human field. So, for example, that pendant shifts a person's energy such that I had one grandmother say, "What I love about this is my grandkids don't run away from me anymore. They now crawl all over me when I visit because they're attracted to the energy." And it's wonderful because, you know, there's not a placebo effect here. You know, children and dogs and animals, you know, they react to these things because they're just attracted to what feels good. And then what happens for the person? The energy starts shifting on what goes on in them. And that shifts what they draw into their life because as we feel better, as our frequency starts rising, that's the kind of elements we bring into our reality. So, this thing called serendipity that kind of is, well, it's just a coincidence, but it's nice when it happens. But really, it should be understood as a common way of being. That when you're in that flow, that's how your life unfolds. And recognizing, I think we were talking earlier, when you are able to be in that higher frequency and you look at the things in the world and things are happening that may not be quite so nice, or sometimes just a real, you've stepped in a real pile of something and it hurts and it doesn't feel good. You can step back and see another interpretation when you're operating from that higher place. And so These are tools that can change lives dramatically because they're based on sacred geometry that works with energy, that shifts the energy in our body in such a way that it shifts our reality totally. And we love that because we've been doing that for 40 years, and this is our purpose in being of service here on the physical dimension at this time.
You know, we kind of came to this in a reverse way of perhaps a lot of other people. And that was that, for instance, Gregory, because of the experience that he had going through a Kundalini awakening, he started to see things that, you know, it's like, all right, he didn't really understand it, but what he was realizing, what he got told and he listened to, was that go make this, just make it. And so he's carrying around all this stuff, and he honestly doesn't know what he's got. And then the journey was, well, what is it? And it's a little bit of, about the way, you know, we evolve our awareness as well. You know, we have things that happen to us, and then if we're curious and we apply consciousness to it, then we want to find out what is this? What's going on? So then from there we got together, and I had some connections with another gentleman, a friend who he was an architect, and he studied sacred geometry in architecture. He introduced us to a lot of concepts, and then he introduced us to some different programs actually down in the area of Crestone. There's a wonderful place called Lindisfarne that we would go to, and we got to learn from some of the giants of sacred geometry back then, like Keith Critchlow and John Michell and Robert Lawler. And so we just started learning about it little by little, but what we were really triggered from was build it, you know, build it and they will come. I guess that's another metaphor. And so we'd build it, and then we'd try to figure out what is it, and then we'd be selling these to people all over the world, and they'd come back and say, oh, we've got to tell you what's happening. And we would learn more and more. So it's been this very wonderful journey of coming into it from the place of not, you know, certainly not the just the mental realm, you know, the studious realm of let me study this and then, you know, try to figure out its applications. But instead, here it is. Now, what are you going to do with it? And playfulness, you know, was another thing. I think both Greg and I love that aspect of go play with it and work with it, evolve with it, see what it does. And when it's doing something that's really valuable, share it.
Wonderful. Yeah, I will say I don't want to open up a can of worms, but I just feel compelled that when you were speaking earlier, about a lot of the changes in what we're seeing, like on college campuses and whatnot right now. What came to my mind is the doctoral program that I graduated from. One of the co-founders was Rick Tarnas. And Rick, I don't know if you're familiar with his work. His major work is Cosmos and Psyche. And he looks at some of the planetary patterns. And I know that the planetary, you know, there's a sacred geometry that's at play there. And so as you were speaking, I found myself embedded in this massive, like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's like it's we're within all of this and it's within all of us. And it was very mind-opening, you know, when you were speaking about that. And it made me wonder if someone has ever actually done a detailed study of the planets and sacred geometry. I know you address some of it in terms of like the moon, the earth, the sun, but it just is mind-blowing. Put it that way, just
Yeah,
mind-blowing.
he's got a lot to say about
There, well,
that.
there are so many authors that have gone into it in real depth and shown that, especially in relationship to the Earth, as we are moving in an orbit, these other planets are moving in orbits that become sometimes, they move forward, sometimes they move backward in relationship to us. And in the process, they form very particular geometric patterns that are perfectly displayed, where, it isn't like they miss and give you a partial pentagon or a partial heptagon. You get the full geometries of the way they interact. And then there are certain elements, like when we talked about the three-dimensional triangle being a tetrahedron. Well, a tetrahedron is kind of the base measure for a lot of this. So that means it has 720 degrees. And when you look at things like the diameter of Pluto and its moon and a lot of the other planets and the Earth and the Sun, they are all evenly divisible by the 720 of the tetrahedron. So constantly you're seeing these amazing giants in our universe that are around us in our solar system that are doing geometric dances, that are doing interactions. And you see, oh, that astrology can be a lot deeper than I imagined, that all of these elements are interacting with us. And then you look at someone that can read the body, and some people can read it from your ear or your eyes or your feet, or, it's like fractally each aspect of our being is also reflecting the whole of our being. Maybe a hologram would be a better metaphor there, but bottom line, it is amazing what's going on with the cosmology of our universe and the people that have gone deep into it. There isn't an end to it, where it keeps being more and more miraculous.
And I believe that our conscious evolution, because when we talk about unity, our conscious evolution is impacting the evolution celestially. The universe will continue to evolve as we evolve. And yes, we are impacting everything as that universe is impacting us. So, the play here is evolution.
Well, good place to end. Well, Gregory, you can speak, but I just wanted to say, in lines of all of that, one of the lines I have written down from your book was, "We are the rhythm that defines creation."
Oh, we wrote that?
Yeah,
Good for us.
apparently. Yeah.
Sometimes I go back and I reread the book and I went, did he write that? Did I write that? Who wrote that?
But what Gail was saying, what we're saying here, reminded me of a poem from Rumi that we had in the book, and I should probably memorize it so I know it exactly. But bottom line, what Rumi was saying, the miracle is not that we are a drop in the ocean, but the ocean is within us. And that's our opportunity as divine beings, each of us connecting to the divine aspect of our beingness and expressing it that way.
Wonderful. Well, I know that we are out of time. I kept you over a little bit, so I apologize for that. But let me ask you, what do you have coming up next? What are you working on now?
Well, the next thing that we're actually working on is going deeper into the book and having some sessions to, kind of like take more, go deeper with the specifics. And having all this, close to 40 years of working with this, plus what we did before that, it was challenging. Like, well, how do you decide what to put in a book and what not to put in the book?
Right.
So we'll take it deeper. And we have this feeling that there'll be another book, but we're not writing anything at this point. We're just going to keep, dealing with this and may have some more classes with it. We have our products that we continue to work with people all over the world, and they can check it out on our website, the iconnectall.com. That's something, that's just there and evolving. And there are some new things that we've been working on that we'll probably make public at some time soon.
Okay. Well,
It's an interesting thing. It's a journey. So we're here to play. See where we take it. So yeah, this is Gregory's put up. If you go to, can you bring it back?
okay.
iconnectall.com/chapter. It's the word I connect is the letter I, the word connect, the number two, all.com/chapter. And download a free chapter of our book, the first chapter, which is about consciousness. It gives you a good taste for how we talk and how we present some of our concepts. And from there, we'd love it if you buy the book, share it with other people, and we'll be here playing more and more.
Wonderful. And I think that sense of play is crucially important. I think often we feel trapped in that we can't play, and we need to be more childlike in play. So I will put the link for the website and for the book in the show notes in the video description so that people can easily access it. So I just want to thank both of you for taking the time to speak with me this morning. I've found it quite interesting, and it's lit a couple fires in my mind, which I always love. And I enjoyed the book. I have a much better understanding now of sacred geometry. So if anyone is curious about that, it's a wonderful resource, and it was a fun read. So I
Oh,
appreciate
good.
that.
Oh, good. I'm so glad that it was fun because there was a part of it where we looked at it and said, are people who really have a problem with math and numbers and things like that because of their education, are they going to be able to come along with it? And we're finding that people really are, and we're thrilled about that.
I'm one of those people where, with all the math and everything, my eyes just kind of glaze over. And that did not happen.
Oh,
I was
good.
able to
Good.
follow and understood what was being said. So I thought it was very well done.
Thank
So,
you.
but thank you again. I really did
Oh, you're
appreciate
welcome.
this conversation.
Oh, thank
Thank
you.
you. Thank you, Nick. It's a pleasure getting to know you. And since you're in Colorado, come visit.
Okay, I might. I need to. I'm exploring Colorado again, so I will make my way towards where you are.
Good.
All right, wonderful.
Wonderful.
All right.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap on episode 143 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're part of my YouTube audience. Now, you know what's coming up. All the usual. Sign up for my Patreon, which has several perks, including ad-free episodes. I know how annoying ads can be. And please share this with friends, family, and on social media. Subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. You know the grind. But here's the thing. All that is really important. Right now, putting together this podcast is a labor of love, and I do love it. I'm in the process of making changes to improve the podcast and the YouTube channel. It's slow going, but your support will help me speed up the process and ensure that I can continue with the podcast and offer much more content than what I do now. As I always like to say, I'm here in the Front Range now doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality, and ecology, consciousness, and psychedelics, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's relationship with the sacred earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be in peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.
And blessings.